Radio Ghana.
Coming to you live from the National Studios in Broadcasting House here in Accra, I am George Asikre with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest update and detailed analysis of current happenings in Ghana and beyond. Tonight, group calls for arrest of Chief of Asin Fosu for claiming that the gods have declared a man innocent of defiling a four-year-old girl. Should the gods be blamed in this circumstance, and how just are they? We find out. Three-member fact-finding committee to look into the circumstances leading to the derailment of Accra Achimota Tema-bound train begins public hearing tomorrow. Is this the beginning of something good for rail transportation? We find out. And President Uhuru Kenyatta of Kenya warns his government will not tolerate those who thrive in chaos and relish anarchy. Tonight, we explore the implications of the make-or-break election rerun tomorrow. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our show. Our text line is 0266-026-941. The Youth for Human Rights Africa is calling for the arrest of Asin Fosu Chief for concealing a defilement case. This follows a four-year-old girl allegedly defiled by one Kwamina in the community on the 14th of October 2017. The mother of the victim, Monica Nyakon, reported the case to the village chief, who later told her that the suspect has been declared innocent by the gods, so there is nothing that could be done about it. Behind the News examines the group calling for the arrest of these chiefs, the merits and demerits of that call. We have been joined on the line by the Communications Director of Youth for Human Rights Africa, Christopher Anku. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Good evening to your listeners. Well, thanks for your time as well. Why are you delving into the decision of the gods?
Quite an interesting position there. Why not? We find it interesting that the gods will actually have a say in matters that have to do with the violation of human rights. And not missing with, we find that extremely incredible. And we will not want to mix issues of reality, issues of fact, with what we would want to term almost arbitrary or things that do not really things that do not really touch on the reality of what is happening. How do we tell the mind of the God in court, or how do we tell the mind of the God in crime? If really the gods are there, then we want to believe that the gods should have a representation. But in this case, they do not have any representation. So let humans do what they have to do.
What is it about this case? How much of it do you know?
We are very much aware that a four-year-old has been defiled. The matter was brought to the attention of the Traditional Council of Asin Fosu, for which they claim to have investigated and find the gentleman not guilty of the alleged crime, for which they on their own have discharged him or acquitted and discharged him. That's what we know for now.
Have you been in touch with the victim?
We have not been able to contact the victim. We have, however, been in touch with the news reporter who broke the news on Joy FM this morning.
So your demand for the arrest of somebody's chief is merely based on media reports?
Authentic media reports, not just media reports, authentic media reports. We have actually followed the story since it broke up, and we have done some checks. We have an ambassador in Asin Fosu who says that is actually what is trending, only that it's difficult getting in touch with the family of the victim as of this morning, and we are still making efforts to get in touch with the family.
In our traditional settings, the chiefs do have the power to take certain decisions, I mean, judicial decision. And so if they have decided to go a certain direction and the police are quiet, why do you want to go a step ahead of that?
No, I don't think the police are quiet in this case. I have followed very well police reports and interviews with police, and the police's position is that indeed the crime was committed, indeed that intervention came from the chief, but they are actually conducting the research. Again, let's take this quite seriously, because we are guided in this country by law, and the Supreme Court of the law of the land is the Constitution. The Constitution does not put that kind of power or authority in the traditional ruling. In fact, if you go to Article 270, 272, 273, clearly the jurisdiction of the National House of Chiefs is well-defined, and intervention in criminal matters is not one of such. Such matters rest in the court. And when I think the court, the high court, and so on. So we do not find the chief intervention in such a serious matter pleasant and acceptable. And we think that they must not overstep. Otherwise, they are engaged in an illegality.
How is your demand being carried on?
The release is the first of them. We intend to petition Shraj. We intend to petition the gender ministry. We intend to petition the presidency. We intend to carry out a further petition. These are only some internal measures we are taking. After which, if we observe carefully and we realize that no step is being taken, especially by the state authorities, because it's a crime and the state must be interested, then we intend to take it a step further by petitioning, for instance, the ECOWAS Commission on Human Rights and other international bodies.
Well, that means you have a long journey to go.
Yes, we do have, because it's an issue of human rights. And if you know very well, issues of human rights are global issues. They are not limited to a state. They are not limited to an individual. They are issues that must concern everyone.
But basically, if you want somebody arrested, you simply report to the police. Have you done that?
The police have taken up the matter. And what we need to do is to ensure, or we also serve as a guard on the police to ensure that they're actually following up on the matter. So we're actually going to do a follow-up on the matter tomorrow. We have an ambassador in Asimfo, so we're going to do a follow-up on the matter tomorrow. We want to be sure not to overstep or not to go ahead of the police. I mean, that's a state institution with clothed with authority and mandated to do such things, and we trust the institution as well. So we are looking forward to good collaboration between the institutions that, i.e., have also similar mandates, Shraj, the ministry, special welfare. We will just serve more like a guard. Once we feel that justice is not being meted out to the victim, then we can take this a step further.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time, and I wish you all the best in this journey. Christopher Anko is the Director of Communications of Youth for Human Rights Africa, a pressure group that is demanding the arrest of the chief of Asimfo for claiming that the gods have taken a decision relative to a defilement case. So how does it work in the traditional setting when it comes to matters of judicial administration? We have been joined on the line by the chief of Akpafu Traditional Area, Nana Kofi Edu. Nana, good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening and good evening to all your listeners.
Nana, some education here. In the traditional setting, how do you play the role of the judiciary?
Well, in the traditional setting, every chief is supposed to have a panel of members who sit and adjudicate on issues. The issues border from civil disobedience, litigation over land barriers, issues like witchcraft, divination, and so on. So when the panel sits, and listens to parties. They give a ruling. After the ruling, libation is poured. And every chief or every panel will have a spiritual head who pour the libation to seek the God's intervention or to seek that the gods should protect or make sure that the ruling that has been done is carried out.
Will the ruling necessarily constitute the views of the gods?
Not necessarily. As chiefs, we represent the people. We also carry out issues that have come either spiritually to us or the ancestors have actually built in us. So when we pass a ruling, we ask the gods to give them blessings through libation for it.
What happens if the ruling of the traditional judiciary is not satisfactory to a party and the party wants maybe to take the path of appeal?
Yes, we have a hierarchy. For instance, it can come from a sub-chief to a head chief and goes to the paramount. So in the same way, like the ordinary, the traditional court, if you are not satisfied at the sub-chief level, you go to the substantive chief level. If you are not satisfied there, you can go to the paramount level. So if you are, but when you exhaust all the stages, then of course you can go to the state. Now, there is a caution here. Governments have now come in to take over certain cases which are criminal, and we have laws guiding them. So chiefs now have been cautioned not to deal with issues that are of criminal nature or where the constitution provides for the traditional courts to take over. So we deal with issues that are not crystal clearly defined in as something to be done by the traditional court.
Well, let's stay with those that you have jurisdiction over. It is possible that you or your panel may come out with a ruling that will not be fair in some instance. And growing up, we were told that for the gods, they deal with truth, justice. So what happens if a decision is taken and it is not the truth, a reflection of the wish of the gods?
Yes, as I said earlier, an issue has come up to at the traditional level, let's say at the town level. It has gone to the paramountcy level. The paramountcy level, the person is not satisfied. He now goes to the traditional council, which is, and then it follows to the regional house of chiefs. So that is how it is. So at least there are, and from the regional house of chiefs, then the next appellate level is the national, and from there it goes to the Supreme Court. So there are avenues for you to get redress if you are not satisfied at the system level. But with the spiritual issues, like the gods have given a ruling, when the gods give a ruling, they pour libation on top. So the gods will have their own way of dealing with it. For instance, an issue has come and the verdict has been given, and the person denies it. We only pour libation. Sometimes we bring in issues like, if this guy denies it, we are asking of the river god to take over, that when he enters there and he's guilty, the river god should deal with him. That is how we end the case. So the individual will now see whether he feels justified to go and fetch water from the river, or he thinks he's just. And when he fetches the water, nothing happens. Then, of course, it's left to him. So the whole society will look at it in this way. If he dare steps there and something happens to him, then, of course, the gods have carried out their task.
Nana, these days, we have so many things going on. We have different religious groupings and their own interpretation of these social constructed facts. So if I am in your community and I do not believe in the gods, and you call me to come and meet your judicial panel and I refuse, what happens?
There is difference between the judicial panel and the court. If I call you in front of the judicial panel and you refuse, you are refusing the orders of the land on which you are living. If we have finished the judgment and I give it to the gods, you can decide not to believe in the powers of the gods. That is your own matter. We who have given it to the gods will believe that once we give it to the gods, they will act. So if you have your belief, you don't believe in the gods, that is your own problem.
Nana, you talked of criminal cases which the state has taken over, but even the laws of the land, the constitution makes reference to the powers of the traditional customs and norms. So if, for example, a case involving rape is reported within the community, and maybe because of the nature of the setting, the chief and the people think that, look, let's keep it here cool, will it be an offense?
To me, personally, it will be an offense. They are supposed, the panel is supposed to sit on it and agree that looking at the circumstances, we will be contravening the law if we deal with it without reporting to the appropriate authorities. So the panel members will have to sit and give their prima facie judgment to declare that this issue has to go further to the public courts or the police. If you sit and deal with it cool, you are condoning and conniving crime.
But can you also, under certain circumstances, go to where the state is handling a case and bring it home for peaceful settlement? For instance, if it involves two clans within a state, a traditional state, and you think that traditional handling of the case, though criminal, will bring peace?
Yes, sometimes we can go. So you appeal to the judge or the magistrate sitting on the case, and if he deems it fit and feels that it will bring peace, he will grant you. But then the order is that go and settle the case and report back to the appropriate court for them to give ratification to what you have done or to tell you that what you have done is not correct.
What happens if I lie on behalf of the gods?
You lie on behalf of the gods as a fetish priest?
Wherever. I just lie. Maybe
I assume that you are sitting in my panel.
Yes, yes.
And you are the head of the god. Yes. Or you are the fetish priest taking custody of the god. And you come to tell the people, you tell the panel the wrong thing for us to carry our justice. That one, you yourself will have a case to settle with the god. Because after that, you will pour libation.
Okay.
In my setting, when the chief priest comes to say this and that, he will pour libation upon what he has said, invoking the powers of the gods to be behind the decision we are taking. So if he lies and pours libation upon it, then he himself is sentencing or putting himself into trouble.
So are these things still real? Do they really happen these days?
They happen. It happened.
All right.
Because, for instance, if right now there is anything and somebody makes a case or he invokes the powers of Akonodi, he invokes the powers of Antoa and the rest, people start shivering and they move here and there. And for all that you do, sometimes they work.
Will you agree with those who think that because we are no more focusing so much on the God, that is why indiscipline is creeping into our society?
Of course, as a chief, I believe in that.
Anyway. Nana, I want to thank you very much for the education this evening. We are very grateful.
Thank you very much.
Nana Kofi Edu is the chief of Akpafu Traditional Area. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We'll be talking to Agenda activist in the course of the program, but currently he is on the highway. We'll be back after this break.
Alam eblo ama ekwafu pi enya asitri de. Dem ame wem emwoyi eyi wonti wo won ahabem. Asu obinyim dem ebro moson suma fofra. Wa beya wari say ebro mo na ndo bai bebreyi ana. Dem umwoyi fi America na mana mana horo ebodru omanga na mu risay ekwafu pi won nyuma. Ebro moson suma damu sronku won son suma busuaku nunti. Onyi de edi chemical de dauno so won anu. Osande oruntu munkumu won. Osade obi biara hunde nsunsuma yi asrafo angasanti onya kwan biara na wozi won fado sel won dem ami wam yi yesronku wosai no bai chen sunsuma fufuru biara nti wonya ahweye dem nsunsuma yi sei ebro wo akwan arupi do akwan ne binyi de otumuzi ebro no mba no na afempo ebro no ahaba no mpo mmoyi tumumpo zi ebro no wo bra ebro no risha sede orifi flowers osan daminti owode anope biara okwenyi biara koshe na ahabanim bombozin tumpasa wa wahabam shede ebuhu amewem yibi osan de washa sizi ebroni fi anapa anade beye enyumri 5 o'clock roko wogudurin zizi no woja wanana ngu ahaban nodo na wasan ditefi no ahata wono dem amewem yi wontu yetuntum na wana pempem apa aye mark biti de wai ibuhu azibi anan wawonhu nambeka de amotuomu pompo wasansu wa ashenso dituntum anan biti de box wa wongho namdo wongho namonsu ya tron tron se oye na se enhu de mwebi ezi webro anade wetu tuntoko wa webro ma no chede da mwweyi aba wahaben se yetu muhu mweyi ntama obuapi ya mbwa mwazen de yobotu mabo yen ahabani muhuban efidem ami webi yu wongho mawona ni nyenti tia wa wahabenu dem nobema yehu ami webi yi in the Agric Extension Officers Asutirin Tam Mawa Bwama Waso Mwaya Non Tam Orin Charukra Yezi Jumedi Awa Friend How to Spray the Army Web Bebre Won Nansu Ansana Yezi Bebre Won Wanya Asheye Iwa Won Ahaban Farm Radio International Na Wadi Damunka Ibo Ibre Won Wanya Mwafi Kabigana Plan Wife and the Ministry of Food and Agriculture Mofa.
Welcome back. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941.
It's probing, it's intrusive yet exciting. Your daily news analysis program, Behind the News, is on Radio Ghana at 8 p.m. sharp, Monday to Friday. Join the crew and be part of all the interesting analysis and hard interviews on your exciting Behind the News. Also heard on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 Sunyai, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa, Volta Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, Obonu FM 96.5 Tema, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in Sekendi Takrade. And remember, we are on GBC's unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
My name is Anas Arimiao Anas. I'm an investigative journalist. I get very, very busy with my investigations, but I always find time to listen to Behind the News on GBC Radio. Listen to Behind the News from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. every weekday.
Behind the News, your incisive news analysis program where you get the last word in all the day's topical stories. Join us every Monday to Friday between the hours of 8 and 9 p.m. as we bring you in-depth analysis of issues making the headlines. Behind the News is also live across the country on Garden City Radio 92.1 in Kumasi, Radio Savannah 91.3 Tamale, Ura Radio 89.7 Bogatanga, GBC Kachi FM 95.5 Kete Kachi, Unique FM 95.7 in Accra, Unique FM 95.1 Osei Kojokrum, and remember, we are on GBC's Unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
Welcome back. Azure Abdul Razak from Nkoko says, "Hi, George. GBC's Sunrise FM in Koforidua does not join Radio Ghana at the exact time for news and current affairs program, so we miss a lot of your programs and sometimes we join halfway. Please, GBC management should do something about this because we need to hook on to Radio Ghana through Sunrise, but they keep on denying us that opportunity." Hi, George. Good evening to you, and God bless you for all your endeavors. You are working hard for Mother Ghana. Thank you. This is coming from Napoleon in Tumu Sankofa base. And moving on to other stories. The fact-finding committee set up by the Minister of Railways Development, tasked to investigate the derailment of the Temakra-bound train on Monday, will begin public hearing tomorrow. Members of the public are supposed to appear before the committee and give eyewitness account of the incident. Tonight, we delve into this issue, asking how far will the recommendations of the fact-finding committee will lead to an overhaul of the country's rail transport system. We have been joined on the line by Jonathan Sam. He is a member of the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport. Good evening, sir, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir.
Thanks for your time. First of all, were you surprised at the derailment that occurred on Monday?
If we all acknowledge the fact that it was an accident, then I should be surprised. Because what is an accident? It's an unexpected an unintentional incident or occurrence. So with that, I believe I should be surprised that it happened.
Oh, is it the first time in recent years that we're recording an accident involving a train?
No, it's not the matter of being the first time, but I know that at least with the track record of railway, they always have some men who are on the spot to ensure that such incidences do not occur. But as you describe it, if we all acknowledge the fact that it's an accident, then it's something worth investigating to find out what actually happened so that at least we can forestall any reoccurrence.
But if it is a genuine accident, will there be the need to investigate? It's an accident.
Sure,
anybody
sure,
can.
Sure. If it's an accident, then of course you need to find out what contributed to that accident. Because you can have multiple factors contributing to it, and you need to find out what actually happened so that you can foresee it, put measures in place and foresee it.
In your estimation, how much will the country be losing now that operations of the Tema Accra, Chimota, Domin, Sawam routes have been put on hold?
We can look that in many folds. I mean, the actual financial terms, in terms of revenue, that is likely to, or that should have accrued to railway by way of the fares, the passenger pay. We can also have a look at it in terms of the passengers who used to travel by rail, who now have to go by road and find their own level. Some of them might be getting to work late. And when that happens, of course, it's going to affect their productivity. And when productivity is affected, definitely it's going to have a toll on the national economy. So it depends upon how you look at it. And, of course, the materials you're also going to use in restoring the line, that also needs to be costed. So it depends upon how you want to cost it.
Government has taken a decision, bold one at that, to revamp the rail sector? And so far, looking at what is on the ground, are we going to see a major competitive transportation using rail?
Sure, I think that is the vision of the government, as indicated by the minister in his interviews. I mean, all the interviews he's granted to the media houses attest to the fact that he's poised, or the government is poised, to effect some transformation in the rail sector. And I think it's very, very, very necessary, because at least we have some traces of improvement in other modes, that's namely the air, the maritime, and the road. If we want to really obtain the right synergies in the intermodalism, then of course the next major transportation, which is rail, needs to be revamped, so that at least it can have, I mean, the pivotal role it is supposed to play in the economy. And of course, the benefits are so numerous, as I've indicated. Once we have a very good rail system, it's going to reduce the congestion on our roads. Once the congestions are reduced, workers are likely to get to their offices on time, and they are likely to leave the offices late, knowing very well that once they leave the office, they are sure to get to their various destinations or homes on time. So definitely that will reflect in the increase in productivity. Congestion is going to reduce. The lifespan of our roads are going to increase, because the heavy loads on our roads are going to move by rail. And I mean, you name it. The amount of money we spend, I mean, in buying fuel is going to reduce, because railway is more energy efficient. It is more environmentally friendly. So the climate in Ghana is going to be very, very nice, because we're going to have reduced pollution. So the benefits are so numerous.
Somebody will say that if I'm into transport business, I have so many of what we call the Kumi Preko cars, the 207, yeah, operating. Once you have enough rail transport in the system, chances are that those who are into the those other businesses, the transport sector, for instance, will not be earning much profit.
I don't think that is the case. It is because in the time past, we've not been able to exploit the synergies of the intermodal transport system. But I believe if we are able to have our priorities right, then we realize that railway will have its role to play. These 207 buses will also have their role to play, because at least they can move them from those areas which are not accessible by rail to the railheads, and these people can go by rail to their various destinations or to the CPDs. So we need an interplay of all the modes to have the best harmony in our transportation system.
Tomorrow, the committee will begin public hearing. What are your expectations?
I know the minister is a man of high repute, so I know he must have solicited people knowledgeable in the rail transportation, people who have high expertise in that area, to do a good job. And we expect that the public, and for that matter, all those who claim to have information about the agreement, who volunteer information, quite apart from that, I mean, trying to analyze agreements, and for that matter, rail accidents, is quite technical. So I believe they will have their experience and knowledge in the rail transportation to bear the work they are going to do.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News today. We are very grateful, Sam. Jonathan Sam is a member of the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana.
It's probing, it's intrusive, yet exciting. Your daily news analysis program, Behind the News, is on Radio Ghana at 8 p.m. sharp, Monday to Friday. Join the crew and be part of all the interesting analysis and hard interviews on your exciting Behind the News. Also heard on Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Sunrise FM 106.7 in Kofodia, Radio BAR 93.5 Sungai, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wa, Volta Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, Obonu FM 96.5 Tema, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in Sekendi Takrade. And remember, we are on GBC's unique FM 95.7, which is online via TuneIn Radio.
My name is Anas Arimiyao Anas. I'm an investigative journalist. I get very, very busy with my investigations, but I always find time to listen to Behind the News on GBC Radio. Listen to Behind the News from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. every weekday.
I am Most Reverend Professor Emmanuel Asante. I have paid my TV license fees, and I want you, as a good citizen of this country, also to pay your TV license fee. The reason why I want you to do this is the TV license fee will enable the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation to deliver on their mandate by educating us, giving us the news that we need, providing the programs that we all yearn for. Do not be a bad citizen of the country, watching programs and not paying for the programs. You must understand that paying for these things doesn't mean that you are only watching GTV. The laws of the land mandates the GTV to collect these fees so that the GTV, the nation's broadcasting corporation, will be able to be the kind of broadcasting corporation you want it to be. Please be a good citizen.
This one says, good evening. Behind the News, the chief of our sinful soul should be taken to court in his attempt to conceal an accused person of a crime. If it is true, the laws of Ghana must work. Citizen Kandibu Na sent in this one. On our real story, the deputy sector minister had agreed to talk to us, but we have difficulty getting to with his line. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. And moving on to other stories. The desire of the biggest opposition leader in Kenya, Raila Odinga, to have tomorrow's election rerun was dashed when only two out of the five Supreme Court justices turned in court today. The Chief Justice David Maringa said one justice was unwell, another abroad, whilst the third had his bodyguard attacked and wounded last night. Hence, hearing of the case cannot continue. A member of the election board said the election will come on tomorrow. Meanwhile, the opposition is continuing with rioting, blocking roads, and burning car ties. exacerbating fears that the election could be bloody. President Uhuru Kenyatta had earlier called for reconciliation and prayers, but today warned that there will be no tolerance of those who thrive in chaos and release anarchy. Tonight on Behind the News, we explore the election in Kenya, which happens to be the biggest economy in East Africa, the implications of what is happening there. We have been joined on the line by Kweku Ajimain Badu Jr. He is an international political analyst. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Hello, good evening, Josh. How are you, Josh?
Very well, thanks for your time. What are the implications of what is happening now in Kenya ahead of the election we run tomorrow?
Well, George, good evening to your listeners. It's interesting, Kenya, again, I do not know where Kenya is heading towards, but the future doesn't look quite good for the people of Kenya and Kenya as a country. I think the stance by both political parties is too entrenched and too such position that is making it very difficult for anything to be changed. You know, Kenya is on edge. Campaign has gone on from being normal to being tested, and the candidates are more defiant before than it used to be. As we know, opposition supporters have clashed with the police in many of their strongholds, especially the Kisumu area of Kenya, and the stance and the statements by various political parties, especially Mr. President Kenyatta and Raila Odinga, is not helping the cause of the election. I'm just praying that Kenya will come out, as we all hope to be another beacon in Africa through the election. Unfortunately, the happenings there doesn't seem to mean that Kenya is going to come out good. Remember the statement by the chairman of the IEBC that he does not see the country, even if such a statement comes from the chairman of the commission itself, that he does not see the country coming out with a clear and free and fair election. That makes it difficult for me to understand the situation in Kenya. Here's a country whereby a deputy commissioner fled the country for fear of her life. A Supreme Court judge's driver was shot, so they could not sit on an important case. That's supposed to postpone the election. Unfortunately, the case itself got postponed because they couldn't form a quorum. Only the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice and another judge were present. Two judges were unavailable. I don't know what that means. One judge was sick. The other could not get a flight back to Kenya because he was out of Kenya. It is interesting. It is being made to seem as if the government or there's a body that's making it difficult for the court state to decide on the case. Mind you, this is not the only case in court. There have been two other high court cases. One got granted whereby the Independent Electoral Board had actually appointed 290 returning officers and their deputies. The issue was taken to court that it was illegally done and actually violated Election Act Regulation 3.2, whereby it provides for a 14-day mandatory provision of the list of those to be appointed prior to the date of being appointed. But this did not go through. The High Court ruled, I think yesterday, that the Independent Electoral Board actually did an illegal job. Another case that was brought to the court by the former to come for the election was actually thrown out by the High Court, saying that they didn't have jurisdiction over the issue. Because this problem was that the Supreme Court ruled for every one of the elections, which meant that it had to go through the same process as a fresh election, whereby candidates needed to be elected and gazetted and then to be put on the ballot box, the ballot papers to be elected. This has not been done, and he fears that it will allow people to take the issue to court to cancel the elections again. It was unfortunately thrown out because the High Court thought they didn't have jurisdiction over the thing.
This notwithstanding, are we going to see tomorrow's election any better than what took place on August 8th?
I do not believe so, George. I do not believe so based on the statement by the chairman of the Electoral Commission, Mr. Dukati himself. And I also do not believe so by the statement by his deputy then, the woman, Rosalind Campbell, who left for the U.S. He said he believes the Electoral Commission is... Remember last week, the statements of the Electoral Commission chairman was even interpreted to mean that he was going to resign because he didn't believe his institution can carry out a good and credible election. It's interesting, George, because it seems it's only the president and the government insisted on the elections going on. Almost all other state institutions, civil society organizations, civil society activists, and all other people are asking for the postponement of this election. But the president is insisting that it goes on. And looking at it, yesterday, the police came out with a statement that even they have withdrawn all VVIP police protection, in that they would have enough police force to go to the various areas to conduct a good election. But the way it goes, George, I do not think the election is going to come out as good.
Okay.
Kenya will be the greatest loser in whichever way. Because now, if it goes on, what it means is that the Jubilee Alliance, which belongs to President Kenyatta, might win more elections and more votes than it won last time.
Right.
And Raila Odinga and his NASA party should ensure that their people do not go to vote to reduce the number of votes so as to make this election a sham.
All right.
They are propagating now.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very good. Kweku Ajimai Badu Jr. is an international political analyst. He's behind the news live on Radio Ghana. We have on the line Dr. Ebenezer Ashley, the chartered economist. Doc, good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening and thanks for having me.
Kenya has one of the good, it's one of the good cases when it comes to the economic performance in East Africa. And what is happening now? What could be the implications?
Once again, thanks for having me. Yes, the implications are very dire. The international community, in terms of investors, look at quite a number of variables in making the investment decisions. The current economic climate in Kenya doesn't call for investor or foreign investor participation. It is not something that should be encouraged at all. It is quite disheartening to hear that there have been calls from different angles for the election to be postponed. So there will be adequate preparation on the part of all the contesting parties. But the current or sitting president is insisting on the election being held tomorrow. Then he would have to put so many security measures in place to ensure that the needed stability in the country is restored, and the needed stability in the country is sustained and maintained, to convince already existing investors that their investment is safe. If not, they are likely to immediately witness capital flight. And basically what it means is that people who have already established in the country might fold their businesses and look also to neighboring countries like Tanzania, Ethiopia, being the Horn of Africa and other countries. And this may affect the overall performance of the economy. It may also affect the direct foreign investment participation. That is also affected.
Are there historical antecedents that can explain what is happening in Kenya today?
If you look at somewhere, there have been some, election skirmishes in the country in some part, but did not degenerate or escalate to this particular level. It looks as if this time around, Mr. Raila Odinga was convinced that he was in a lead until the untoward happened, and given perhaps information that is available to him, he thinks the contesting ground isn't fair enough for him to go into it. I don't think this is something that should continue in a country like Kenya, which is, modeled for good governance and democracy. I don't think it is good, but I think there is a precedent, but not to this particular extent.
Well, so tomorrow is the D-Day, and it is clear the opposition, the biggest opposition, is boycotting the election. Other opposition parties are going to take part in the exercise. Do you think that whatever the outcome, Kenya or the international community will accept it?
Well, there have been some comments prior to the inclusion of the smaller parties in the race. There are many international watchers who have, described the election in different words. I don't want to say unprintable words. And it, what it means is that there are some doubts and reservations about the authenticity of tomorrow's election. And if the indications or signals are anything to go by, one could conclude then aptly that the strongholds of Mr. Raila Odinga might not be actively involved in the voting exercise, which may reduce the turnout compared to the earlier election that was held. If the numbers should go up, then that may be a little bit surprising, and it may be quite questionable. But all at the same, I think they must try to see each other. It is sometimes difficult to, meddle in the affairs of a sovereign country. But in this particular situation, especially being an African country, I think it calls for concern for all of us. And I don't think the situation in Kenya is anything good to write home about. The outcome of tomorrow's election, well, we wait to see. We just hope the figures will not be massaged, they will not be manipulated to give a very good picture of a good turnout. I don't think that will be the case at all.
If President Kenyatta is retained, can he still keep the economy moving as it is now?
Well, internally, he might be able to put some structures in place and perhaps hold on to most of the policies that have already commenced. But his ability to convince the external investors to come in might be challenging and suspect. You know, he might have to go the extra mile to convince the international investment community that they come in into a safe haven to invest their hard-earned financial resources and, in some cases, technological resources. It may also depend on how the opposition party might keep the country calm after the election. And also, quite a number of factors will come to play to determine how serene the governance process would be for President Uhuru Kenyatta should he emerge victorious tomorrow, or how chaos and economically turbulent it will be for him tomorrow should he win. I think he would have a very tall order. He will have an arduous task on hand, that is trying to convince Mr. Raila Odinga to accept the verdict or the election outcome so that he would calm the nerves of his team and supporters to appreciate the fact that they have an elected president. And this, I'm sure, might not come easily for President Uhuru Kenyatta with regards to the acceptance of his winning by Mr. Raila Odinga.
Will a destabilized Kenyan economy inure to the benefit of surrounding countries in East Africa?
Yes. You know, as Africans, we need to share in the woes of our neighbors. But from an economic perspective, as I mentioned, the turbulence there might send good economic signals to the neighboring countries, where there may be strong capital flight. That is, those foreign investors who might think their shops, their homes, will come under siege, would seek refuge and economic shelter elsewhere. So some might have already begun negotiating or looking for alternative country to resettle in. And also it may end up pushing part of the investment from Kenya into the neighboring countries. And that would then augur well for the country's targeted GDP growth for this particular year. It may even set backward hard-earned single-digit inflation that it has held on for quite some time now.
To us in Ghana, why should we be concerned about what is happening in Kenya?
Because the elders put it, when the chin is slapped, the eye is equally affected. And therefore, if we are all Africans, we must be concerned about the difficult situations in our neighboring countries. And that is where we would come in strongly. And, when there are chaotic situations on the continent. When you move out of the continent, people see it as a chaotic situation in your own country. Interestingly, there was one vice presidential candidate in the United States who didn't even know that Africa is a continent. She thought Africa is a country. And it speaks volume of how we must always preach and strive for peace on the continent so that collectively we could live in peace and be able to pursue our common agenda of uniting to have a formidable continent, to rub shoulders with other continents across the globe.
Some people have argued that in East Africa, turbulence actually has led to many progress in some of the countries, Rwanda, Uganda, and so on. So is it a case that for Kenyans, they shouldn't be worried too much?
Yeah, well, if you could also add a country like Ethiopia, in the midst of its economic progress, there are still some civil unrest in Ethiopia as well. Just to backtrack your assertion, but I don't think it is something one should encourage at all. And a case may be, you know, peculiar to each country. The indigenous of Kenya might have a different view of what is actually happening and might have a telling effect on the economic development and growth of the country, and therefore cannot be encouraged. The way it might be entertained and controlled in another country might not be the same in Kenya. In Kenya, look as if the wind of democratic, you know, development seems to be blowing better than the neighboring countries, and therefore the direct comparative analysis might not hold strongly in this particular context. It is on the basis of this that some of us would urge the fielding parties in Kenya to smoke the peace pipe. I think President Uhuru Kenyatta might think there are some external hands trying to manipulate and fit him. And it is on the basis of this that he's insisting on holding the elections tomorrow as planned, because it has already been rescheduled for 9 days. You know, it was originally scheduled for, I think, the 19th.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was pushed forward. It was actually the, I think, 17th, and after 9 days, it was pushed to 26. So the postponement, he thinks it's perhaps there are some hands that are trying to manipulate the process. But it all depends on how effective he's able to put the internal mechanisms in place to regulate any skirmishes that would emanate as aftermath of the elections tomorrow.
All right. Doc, we are very grateful for your time on our show tonight. Thanks for talking to us. Dr. Ebenezer Ashley is a certified economist. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Some of our text messages here. In fact, George, we are really living in a crazy world. What at all does a man want from a four-year-old girl? And please, will the committee on the real accident collect allowance? House Party is asking from Cape Coast. Good evening, George. I think the chief should be arrested since crime was physically committed and not a spiritual issue to be determined by the gods. Kipu Abdul Samed in Techimai sent in this one. George, in fact, the problem with our rail lines are old, and so setting up a committee to investigate is not the solution. Monica Combs in Navungo. Good evening, George. You are doing great service to Mother Ghana. God bless you. Amen. Ernest. Jake Aye in Kalio sent in that one. The sinful Sioux chief should be arrested and punished by WO1 retired Walter Stephen Bethel Cortes Apua. And that is how we end tonight's edition of Behind the News. My producers have been set here: John Poby, Belant Elomtete, and John Akampale. Our sound engineer has been Gifty Broom. And I'm George Asikriti. We'll meet again, God willing, same time tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of our programs.